v. Scott Smith.
Good morning. May it please the Court, I'm Glenn Peterson, McDonough, Holland & Allen, for the appellant Scott Smith. The central question to be decided here is whether and to what extent the common English noun entrepreneur, which is without synonym, as already noted by this Court, can be appropriated for commercial use by a business enterprise. And how far does the associated right to exclude others go? Your colleagues on the panel who heard the earlier appeal related to this case, Judges Fletcher, Nelson, and Berzin, have already determined that EMI, the publisher of Entrepreneur Magazine, cannot appropriate the word entrepreneur. Rather, trademark law allows EMI only the exclusive right to use the trademark entrepreneur to identify the products described in its registration. Central to this appeal are the issues of mandate, law of the case, fair use, and to some degree the standard of review.
Mr. Peterson, that's where I have a little difficulty. I don't understand why law of the case or the mandate have anything to do with it, and fair use was waived. All we did previously was to say there are tribal issues of fact on the record as it existed and sent it back to be tried. Now we got a trial record, which is a quite different animal. So I just don't quite get why rules of the mandate or law of the case have anything much to do with this.
Okay. Well, I'll address that question, Judge Reimer. It's an important question in the case, and it's really the central one in some respects. Your colleagues on the prior panel remanded this case with the exception of the issue of infringement regarding the printed publication.
Right.
And your colleagues also gave a lengthy reasoned opinion, which was a fairly exhaustive analysis of the case, the legal issues, some of the factual issues.
With respect to each one of which, the Court very carefully said, on this record.
Well, I respectfully disagree with that. With respect to some of the issues, that caveat was included. With respect to many important issues, that caveat was not included. For example,
but if that had been the case, they would have just decided it as a matter of law in your favor, right?
Well, and that's precisely what we believe the prior panel did.
No, it could not have, because it remanded the case for trial.
Well, with respect to certain issues, Judge Nelson, Judge Thomas, I beg your pardon.
He's a panel all by himself.
I'm not a famous mark.
Can we just go on?
The question that leaps off the pages of the prior opinion to me is, why would the prior panel, go to such lengths if its real message was only that, you know, there are tribal issues of fact that really preclude the grant of summary judgment here? Because what the prior panel did is quite different than that. And typically, when I read opinions reversing summary judgment on the basis that there are tribal issues, that's about all that it is said in the opinion. And the case gets remanded for the tribal
issues. Sometimes some people take longer to say the same thing than others, but I mean, it doesn't change the bottom line.
Well, but I believe it does, Your Honor, because
what's your best case that says that? I mean, I understand your argument from you're drawing implications from the prior, but if you're really saying that this panel is prohibited from doing anything different from the other panel because they made judgments as a matter of law on all these issues, you better have a pretty good case that says that.
I'm not saying that this panel can't do anything different than the prior.
You're saying the district court couldn't? You're saying we couldn't? Law of the case is the law of the case?
Well, what I'm saying is this panel has to review, and I believe under an arguably mixed standard of review, but predominantly under the abuse of discretion standard, this panel has to review what the trial court did in light of the analytical directives that were contained in the prior published opinion, and what the trial court did with respect to the remedy. And this is where I think the best indication is that the prior panel had in mind not remanding the entirety of the case to be tried de novo, okay?
Well, but that, after applying the Sleek-Craft analysis, we agree with the district court's ultimate finding of likelihood of confusion as a matter of law only as to the use of the mark Entrepreneur Illustrated on the cover of the printed publication. We therefore reverse the grant of summary judgment and remand except as to that issue.
That's the mandate.
Except as to that issue, and what the prior panel did, Your Honors, went further and usurped the remedy. In other words, the prior panel didn't just affirm the finding of infringement with respect to the printed publication. The prior panel said, here's what you do with it. We affirm the finding of likelihood of confusion and infringement on the printed publication, but here's what you, the trial court, are to do with that conclusion. And that's where I think the biggest sign is that your colleagues on the prior panel had something different in mind than what EMI is arguing here, because they did not only took the time and effort to go through all eight of the Sleek-Craft factors, but took the time and effort to articulate analytical directives as a cue to the trial judge, and then usurped the remedy with respect to the printed publication.
So if you're left without, if we disagree with you, do you lose the case? Disagree with you in terms of the effect of the prior decision? Are you conceding that that's the linchpin of this appeal, that your appeal depends upon that?
No, I don't, for this reason, because, well, the question remains, did the trial court on trial on remand follow the analytical directives of the trial court? And you're saying, I guess, set that aside. If this panel believes that there were no
I'm just suggesting that maybe I'll spend your time arguing the merits of it, because if you're right, you're right, and okay. On the merits. But if your case depends upon the finding of the mandatory adherence to the other panel's conclusions in your view, then that's a different matter.
Well, I think that the issue of adherence to some aspect of the prior published opinion is
well, let me pose a somewhat different question based upon the prior opinion itself, where it refers to evidence on the one hand and on the other hand. Why isn't that just by definition an indication that the district court can't have clearly erred in making fact findings that it did?
Well,
our opinion recognizes facts on both sides. It just said they couldn't be weighed as a matter of summary judgment, as a matter of law. But it recognized arguments on both sides and sent it back, and the district court decided them.
Well, this gets me a little bit back into analytical directives. The easy, I guess, issue in the Sleek-Craft analysis is strength of the mark. Your colleagues on the prior panel ruled that this mark is weak, descriptive.
Well, here's what it says. They say, quote, nonetheless, EMI has not demonstrated that it has so strengthened this mark as to weigh this factor in favor of finding. At trial, it will have the opportunity to prove its mark is stronger than it appears.
At trial.
And then district court held, the extensive advertising and public recognition that past 25 years have established plaintiff's mark as a strong mark in the industry. So, what do we make of that?
The prior panel also says, Your Honor,
isn't it your job to show that conclusion was clearly erroneous? Here?
Well, that gets us into the standard of review.
Or abuse, I mean, whatever, but I mean.
One or both, but yes, I think the predominant standard is abuse. Because
all right. Well, explain to me then why you think the district court got it wrong on the strength of the mark.
Well, because the prior panel ruled that the mark was weak for a number of reasons, starting with
the longer you talk, the longer you lose me, too. I mean, I see this as a simple question of explaining why summary judgment wasn't appropriate in this case. And send it back, you got to have a trial. So all the factors that aren't enough for summary judgment are certainly could be enough for the trial. And here you had a trial. The judge arrived at certain conclusions.
Well, on the Judge Trott, on the strength of the mark issue, the prior panel said that the prior panel considered EMI's circulation, the circulation of the magazine, and its advertising. Those were both addressed in the Lozanski declaration that was before the court on summary judgment. The passage read a moment ago by Judge Thomas indicated that EMI would have an opportunity at trial to show greater strength. That left only one way to accomplish that, and that was to show public recognition or consumer association with the mark. And there was no evidence presented at trial on that issue.
Well, your argument seems to be that the summary judgment should have been granted in your favor after the first panel decision.
No, because
well, if you're saying you can't have, as a matter of law, you couldn't find against me.
No, that's not correct, Judge Trott. The reason is because the prior panel ruled that there was infringement, and they ruled there was infringement based on, among other things, evidence of Smith's intent to confuse and evidence of actual confusion to some degree. Now, no matter how I might spin that, I don't think I could spin that as a ruling in his favor. All I'm saying is that the prior panel said we're not ruling in his favor, but the remedy needs to be carefully crafted and the sleek craft factors applied with the utmost caution in mind because, excuse me, the mark is a weak mark inherently, and because it's a common English noun that needs to be used and can be used under the doctrine of fair use by others in the marketplace, including Smith. So the message that I think speaks volumes from the prior panel is that the prior panel said, okay, we have evidence of intent, we have evidence of actual confusion, and even with that, we think that the remedy needs to be thoughtfully and carefully fashioned to allow Smith to use Entrepreneur Illustrated in a way that avoids likelihood of confusion. And that is very harmonious with the prior panel's ruling that Entrepreneur could not usurp the word Entrepreneur.
So what do you think the prior panel's ruling required the district court to do on remand?
Number one, fashion a remedy that's carefully crafted to allow for fair use of the common English word entrepreneur.
I don't understand where this fair use thing comes into the equation.
I don't either.
Okay, well, I can point you to page 1148, Judge Reimer, of the prior published opinion, where your colleague said, this approach takes into account the fact that consumers may well recognize that Smith uses terms that include the word entrepreneur for what the word means, not because of an association with Entrepreneur magazine.
Yeah.
A sliding scale is therefore a logical way to connect relatedness of products. They go on to say, while the public and the trademark owner have an interest in preventing consumer confusion, there is also a broad societal interest in preserving common useful words for the public domain. We do not want to prevent the commercial use of a descriptive word, of descriptive words to name products, as straightforward names are often the most useful identifiers. An absolute measure of relatedness in contrast would discourage the use of descriptive words and marks.
So where's the words fair use and all that?
Well, the words fair use are not explicitly used, but as we pointed out,
they're not only not explicitly used, they're not used at all.
Well, neither does the statute use those words, Judge Trott. If you look at the statute, and we briefed
well, neither did the pretrial order or your approach in the trial court.
Right, and that was the point we've made is that you don't have to invoke the words fair use to invoke the doctrine of fair use. And it's obvious to me, without using those two words, fair use, that the prior panel is addressing just that. The fair use of the word in the English language to describe whatever it is being addressed to in language as opposed to using it as it is used as a trademark by Entrepreneur Magazine. So the other provision that I would point to is in the conclusion section on the last page of the published opinion, the prior panel said, although EMI has the exclusive right to use the trademark entrepreneur to identify the products described in its registration. Trademark law does not allow EMI to appropriate the word entrepreneur for its exclusive use. The descriptive nature and common necessary uses of the word entrepreneur require that courts exercise caution in extending the scope of protection to which the mark is entitled. We have applied the Sleekcraft factors with that caution in mind, and on remand the district court should do so as well.
Okay, where does that say, then, the words that you added, that the district court must carefully fashion a remedy in line with that? I mean, that's surplusage on your part.
Well, I think it's inherent in the statement that that I just read, Your Honor, that where we have applied the Sleekcraft factors with that caution in mind, and on remand the district court should do so as well. And right above that, your colleagues on the prior panel were saying that you can't have a situation where a trademark owner is removing a word from the English language. You combine that with the remedy that the prior panel articulated, which they did not have to. I mean, that's another thing that speaks loudly to me. The prior panel did not have to fashion any remedy at all. I mean,
well, you've got a prior panel that was enthused about your position.
I'm sorry?
You had a prior panel that was enthused about your position. I can understand why you're enthused about their opinion. But I think the problem here, that I just don't see how it handcuffed either the district court or us. And so we have to examine it on a different, with a different standard of review. I mean, the inferences draw to your favor on summary judgment. It's a very different review. So I think you'd be better off focusing on what the district court did here. And arguing why the district court was wrong under our standard of review, which goes the other way.
It's very deferential at this point.
Well, one of the things that I believe the district court did wrong is the district court concluded that this trademark is a strong mark entitled to the utmost protection. The other thing the district court did was enjoin Smith from using the word entrepreneur. Specifically, the prohibition articulated in the trial court was he can't use any trademark confusingly similar to entrepreneur, including Entrepreneur Illustrated, Entrepreneur PR, EntrepreneurPR.com, and Entrepreneur. And so, you know, the fact that the trial judge enjoined use of the word, I think, not only doesn't it harmonize at all with the message from the prior panel, it doesn't harmonize with fair use generally, that you would enjoin someone from using.
At trial, EMI will have the opportunity to prove that its mark is stronger than it currently appears, citing the panel. And then the district court says plaintiff has done so.
Well, elsewhere in the prior opinion, Your Honor, they state that
you're going to go down with that ship. Go ahead. I mean, if you can't read what the panel is saying, be our guest.
All right.
I mean, here it is. It says, at trial, EMI will have the opportunity to prove his mark stronger than it currently appears. And then the judge, plaintiff, has done so. What do we do with that?
Well, the prior panel had evidence of advertising and circulation.
Right. And you put that on a trial, right?
No, that was in summary judgment. That was already.
I know, but I mean, you put that on defense at trial, I assume, right?
Yes, and there was no evidence at all of public recognition or consumer association of the mark. And so, if this is to be reviewed,
there was a lot of testimony from people that said we were actually confused by this. To sum up what they said,
right? But that's a separate factor, Your Honor, than strength of the mark.
Except that to find they're confused, they also had to identify that they recognized the prior mark.
Right.
But what matters is public, according to the prior panel, that you have to show confusion among an appreciable number of consumers. And, that's law in this circuit generally. You can find that elsewhere other than in this prior opinion.
The extensive advertising and public recognition over the past 25 years have established plaintiff's mark as a strong mark in the industry. There's no evidence of that?
Not by virtue of consumer association, no.
Right, there's extensive advertising. You can see that there was evidence of that. True.
Right, and that was before the court previously.
Right, it's not definitive. And you claim then that there's no evidence it's a strong mark in the industry.
By virtue of consumer association or recognition, yes.
Well, there was testimony that it was a strong mark in the industry. What your argument apparently is that it failed as a matter of law.
No, Your Honor.
There was some testimony to the effect that within the small business segment of the directed, that this was a strong mark. And you'd have to concede that. It's a primary small business, premier small business magazine, isn't it?
At page 6 and 7 of our reply, which I'm not going to read, we address this issue. The one witness, the expert witness, Virginia Mann, that they produced at trial to offer opinion testimony on the strength issue, she readily admitted on cross-examination by trial counsel that she did not do any research on the public association with the word.
That isn't what I asked, though. I said, didn't she testify that it was a strong mark in the industry?
Yes or no?
I think she did, but without the support of any research on public recognition.
She testified as a strong mark in the industry, so that supports at least part of it, the conclusion that it was a strong mark in the industry.
You know, excuse me, I'm not sure that Virginia Mann did. I know EMI's own witnesses, their own employees, testified about strength of the mark. And on that subject, you know, we've referred the court in our brief to the Filipino Yellow Pages case and other cases that say that evidence from related parties or partial sources possesses very limited probative value. I'm quoting from page 7 of the reply.
That's utterly useless to us. I mean, you've got a judge down below who took that into consideration in connection with all the other evidence. Anyway, your time has expired, counsel. Thank you very much. I notice you didn't reserve any, so we'll hear from the other side.
Good morning. Mark Finkelstein of Latham & Watkins for the Plaintiff Entrepreneur Media. As this Court has pointed out, we already had a ruling following summary judgment, and I believe the Ninth Circuit's previous opinion was clear, that there were a lot of disputed factual issues, a lot of credibility determinations that had to be decided by a trial. The opinion points out that Mr. Smith himself had moved for summary judgment, which the District Court denied, and of course, the previous panel sustained that. That is, they didn't award Smith summary judgment on anything. So I agree with Your Honor's points that based on that decision, you have to find that Judge Cooper could have ruled in favor of Entrepreneur Media.
Good. What's your next point?
Let me go on. Strength of the mark. Actually, let me hit one issue. On standard review, just to clarify, I don't think fair use applies here. I think it was waived. It doesn't apply for a number of reasons, but we did say we thought if it did apply, it was de novo. I'd like to correct that. I think if it applies, it's clearly erroneous based on Clant Manufacturing Company versus ENCO, 870 F. 2nd, 512, and I pointed that out to Mr. Peterson before the argument.
What was your best evidence on the strength of the mark?
Your Honor, we presented a lot of evidence regarding strength of the mark. In the 3 years prior to the trial, 1 million new subscribers to the magazine. 13 million unique visitors to the entrepreneur.com website. In the 3 years prior to the trial, $46 million in advertising and marketing, including the cost of the magazine itself. In addition, Reba Lisansky appeared on shows like CNN-FN, Oprah, and others promoting the brand. EMI received an award from Capel's Circulation Report. Mr. Smith's the one that admitted, Judge Thomas, that Entrepreneur is well-known in the small business community. Certainly he's not associated with us. Mr. Smith's expert himself admitted that the vast majority of the proper noun uses of Entrepreneur are associated with Entrepreneur magazine. He also admitted, when we asked him about these other magazines that have Entrepreneur in the title, that he wasn't familiar with any of them other than Entrepreneur magazine. He didn't know if any of them were being published, what their circulation was, if anybody possibly could be aware of it.
And how much of this information was new at trial as opposed to information that was in the record at the time the prior panel considered the summary judgment motion?
Well, certainly the new subscribers was new. The 13 million unique visitors was new. The advertising dollars was new. The award from Capel's circulation report was new. And Mr. Smith's expert's admission regarding the proper noun uses of the word entrepreneur being associated with Entrepreneur magazines.
And to sum up, you say that's sufficient to support the trial court's conclusion this was a strong mark?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Okay.
Okay. Regarding actual confusion, we presented an abundance of evidence of actual confusion.
Witnesses themselves so testified.
Yes, Your Honor. Fair use, like I said, we don't think applies here. We think it was waived. We have this in the papers. I know Mr. Peterson didn't talk about this, but certainly the court did not abuse its discretion in awarding damages and an injunction. Also, the previous appeal did not foreclose a broader injunction on Entrepreneur Illustrated. What the court said was, as to the magazine, you've proven it as a matter of law. As to other uses, let's let the district court decide that, and she did. If there are no other questions.
No, thank you. The case just argued is ordered submitted. We thank both of you. We'll get your decision as soon as we can. And we'll be in recess until tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock.
All rise. The court for this session stands adjourned.